being open to experimenting with a few trainers who have had a good track record in the past, and then seeing that how they are interacting with their kid is an important thing. And then, of course, you see the results which come out. I think that shows many times that, you know, okay, the kid is progressing, like in chess, there is a rating. But the relationship dynamic is often this, that the parent takes a backseat and lets the coach handle the chess aspect, while the parent takes care of the entire ecosystem of the kid around, you know, there are many aspects, and make sure that the kid keeps enjoying the sport. That is what I feel the role of the parent slowly transforms into.
Hi, welcome to Partners in Upbringing. I'm Kalyani.
Hi, I'm Himani.
And we are mums just like you.
Always on the lookout. So come and join us in our endeavor as we connect with parenting experts and fellow parents to know the best practices for raising happy and confident children.
Listen to us on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, and join us on Facebook and Instagram at Partners in Upbringing.
India is witnessing the golden era of chess with Gukesh, Pragnananda, Vishwanathan Anand in the FIDE Top 20 men's category, and Hampi Koneru and Harika Dronavalli in the Top 20 women's category, along with 9 more high-ranking players in the juniors, and the Indian Chess Federation being ranked number 2 in the world. With chess gaining more popularity, participation and recognition in the younger age group, today we would be covering the various aspects that go into making of a chess champion with none other than international master Sagar Shah, who has greatly contributed to the chess boom in India.
Sagar actually needs no introduction, but for those who are not familiar with the world of chess, Sagar is an international master, like Kalyani said. He is a journalist, a commentator, a YouTuber, and a CA by profession. He is a founder of Chess Base India, which is the most popular chess platform in India and one of the biggest chess media houses in the world. It is also the biggest chess news portal and chess software distributor in the country. Their motto is powering chess in India. Chess Base India also facilitates sponsorships and helps raise funds for chess players. So, with immense pleasure today, I would like to welcome Sagar to Partners in Upbringing podcast. Sagar, we are so eager to have this conversation with you.
Thank you, Kalyani. Thank you, Himani. I think the only thing which I felt was a little bit out of place was that I am a chartered accountant by profession.
What I meant was chartered accountant by educational qualification. Okay. By profession, you are a chess champ.
I never really did anything related to CA after becoming one. So yeah, I just pursued chess as a profession. Yes. Yeah, but thank you so much.
Most welcome. Sagar, let's directly, you know, dwell into the topic and talk about how to make these champions. So you've trained so many of these players, so many champions, and contributed to their success in a very big way. We would like to know, according to you, what does it actually take to make a chess champion? And I'm sure there is an ecosystem which is contributing to the success. And there would be a couple of stakeholders, child, parents, coaches, and, you know, you can add on to that. But let's, you know, take one by one, like one stakeholder at a time. And then we would like to know, you know, what is their contribution? What happens from you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think I personally have been a observer, sort of a witness of so many young talents in Indian chess rising from being sort of beginners at chess to becoming the absolute best in the world. And yes, you are right that a lot of things have to fall in place for such things to happen. And it is amazing that so many youngsters have managed to do well in chess over the last decade or so. So the first stakeholder, as you said, is the player. And I think that is an irreplaceable stakeholder. The player himself has to sort of give his best if they want to become the best in the world. And I think it all starts with sort of enjoying the game, enjoying the sport. And I think this is where the very basis of a champion is created, that no one really goes to chess with the thought of becoming a champion. They go to the sport with the thought of just enjoying it, feeling excited every time they sit on the board, just wanting to beat their opponent or something of that sort. You know, it's very basic in that sense, which drives someone who's very young to the game of chess. And I think it's a very, very important phase in the growth of any player that the parent recognizes this aspect, that their kid is enjoying it, that the kid is enjoying and loving the thing that they are doing. So I would say the first step, rather than just seeing the stakeholder, I would say the first step involves the kid and the parent both, where they have to observe that the child is actually enjoying what he or she is doing.
Beautifully said. And it just reminded me of a saying, if you want to succeed at something, hard work is not necessary. You need to enjoy that work.
Yes, I think overall hard work is something that is very easily said, that, you know, put in the hours and it will work out. But I also agree with you that work does not look hard for someone who's enjoying it. It's only a glorified concept of discipline, determination, hard work, and all of it. When you love something, it's hard work just becomes a natural byproduct of it. And for kids, it's not important to teach them hard work as such, because when they enjoy something, they can do it for hours. So I think by showing that something is hard work, we make it a little hard for them sometimes.
Yeah, true. Yeah. We had seen a couple of videos that you had done where you had said that when the child and the father are learning chess together and there is a move that he does, the father defeats him in the move. The next time he remembers that move, and then the father defeats him in another move. Then the next time he remembers that move also, strategizes in a way that he's covered on both the strategies, and then the father comes up with a third strategy and defeats. The point that I'm getting to is this is the process, is what I'm assuming, to learn chess, right? How does the child keep interest at it? The kids are experiencing defeat every day, at least in the time that they are learning it, and to come up to a certain level. How does it encourage them?
What you said actually is very similar to my story of how I learned chess, because my father one evening just came back and said, oh, we have a chess board in our cupboard and let's take it out. And we started, he started showing me the rules of chess. And I think it became something where after the day and having dinner and he would come back from work, I would look forward to just playing with him. And he was pretty decent at chess because he had learnt it when he was young and he used to play it with his relatives. So he would beat me. I think what was interesting for me, and what was very sort of thought provoking right now for me, is that I used to cry every single day after losing to him. And here is where things could go in many directions, right? Like my father could say, okay, this boy is crying, maybe I should let him win. Or they could think that, oh, he's crying, maybe there is no need for us to play this game. Let's play something else, which is more fun. But actually, crying was not the most important aspect of it. The most important aspect was that I was playing it with full focus when I was playing with him. And when he would go to work, maybe I would try to figure out like some way to beat him, and maybe some books, or there was a software in the computer where I was trying to figure a way out that if I learn something new, I can beat him. So this actually flowed from me. You know, he didn't tell me go and study this way. So I think that this was a very brilliant type of parenting, although I don't think it was very conscious at that point. It just happened naturally. But if I break it down right now, I feel like he did not really push me to learn it, nor did he take it easy or try to sort of encourage me by letting me win. And I learned it this way. And that is my journey of improvement. And I think this is where everyone's story is different. I have also heard stories in chess journey where someone managed to beat their parent very quickly. And that really inspired them to say, and the parents got very inspired saying that, oh, if the kid can beat me, imagine how much talent the kid has. And you know, they went on to become very good players. So I think there's no one story as such. But your question was that when kids lose, how does the motivation come to them to keep improving or keep working on it? I think it works differently for different kids.
It's very clear that it has to come from within for the child.
Yes.
It has to flow from the child. Is that what you clearly...
Yeah, I think overall, keeping it flexible for the parent is actually a very good good space to be in as a parent. Because the child will show interest in something sooner or later. And then that can be pursued. Rather than saying that this is where we want him or her to become a champion. And I'm going to push in that direction.
Just going back to the first question, would you like to share some more thoughts on parent as a stakeholder and the coach as a stakeholder in making of a champion?
Yeah, I think as we discussed, the parents aspect more often than not is to create the right environment for the kid, to create an ecosystem where the kid can thrive, to be very, very carefully looking at what are the things that the kid is enjoying and the kid is not enjoying and so on. Sometimes the parent himself or herself can be the coach, which happens rarely, but it does happen. And at that point, the dynamics become very different and actually also very interesting because while the improvement journey happens very quickly at start, because, you know, you have a very direct relation, you can spend more time, you are able to see the kid improving. At some point, it does happen that you have other relationship aspects also between the kid and the parent. So at that point, it sort of spills over into the other parts of life as well. But when the coach is different than the parent, then I think it's very important that the parent trusts the coach. But at the same time, they have to figure out who the right coach is for their kid. And this is the tough part because the parents generally do not know about chess much. Mm. And then they have to figure out who is a good coach and not just a good coach, the right coach for their kid. Because there are many coaches who are very, very accomplished, but does not work well with their kid.
If you are enjoying this conversation, please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Thank you.
And I think so that is where being open to experimenting with a few trainers who have had a good track record in the past and then seeing that how they are interacting with their kid is an important thing. And then, of course, you see the results which come out. I think that shows many times that, you know, okay, the kid is progressing, like in chess, there is a rating. But the relationship dynamic is often this, that the parent takes a back seat and lets the coach handle the chess aspect while the parent takes care of the entire ecosystem of the kid around. There are many aspects and make sure that the kid keeps enjoying the sport. That is what I feel the role of the parent slowly transforms into.
Sagar, could you just elaborate on when you say ecosystem, what all does it include?
Like, for example, some kids can learn chess on their own alone. They enjoy it. It's a personal training. But then some kids just do not like it. And I think at that point, it's very important that you find a group of kids who are learning chess, maybe a club nearby, finding other kids who are playing chess. And I think that can be a very nice sort of community-like feel. So observing this, many times, you know, a coach or somewhere you hear saying that, okay, 3 hours of XYZ training would be very useful for the kid, like working on some book or something like that. And the kid does not really like opening the book, but the kid likes to play with other kids chess, you know, and that is where I think the parents and the coach and all have to figure the way ki ha ye bacche ke liye this is the right way that the kid is progressing, and we build the entire ecosystem of chess around him, which is like, okay, more tournaments, more playing practice, more more interaction with others, rather than doing study at home, giving books, and that kid is, you know, sitting alone and flipping through the pages. Then suddenly that thing becomes dull and boring for the kid.
So for a coach, it, like you said, that it's difficult to find the right coach for your child. So for a parent, what are the one or two things that you would say that these are the things that you must have in a coach when you're selecting one for your child?
I think one of the things which is very common in good trainers is that they do not really all the time look at just the results. Let's say, for example, if the coaching is for a couple of hours, then they do not like say, okay, now the time is up and I would leave, you know, the coaching, the training, because it's like a joint sort of a thing with the kid. And sometimes they could train for more hours, sometimes lesser, you know, it's a bond that develops, especially at the start. To expect this might be a little bit too much, because the coach has many other engagements, other students to see. But I think once the bond starts to develop, you will naturally see that there is an inclination for the coach to give more of his time or more of his energy to the student than what is just agreed upon. And I think that naturally happens. You can sense it as a parent that the coach is thinking about your kid. He's finding time from other engagements and trying to do it. But it takes time, and that is where the trick is, that you cannot really expect it to happen on day one, that the coach is going to leave everything and just think, oh, your child is very talented, I'm going to give it my all. It sees, the coach first sees how the kid is picking up things, how he is enjoying it, how is his performance sometimes also inspires the coach many times, how quickly he's learning and grasping. And so the parent needs to be patient during this phase. I've also seen some parents tell the coach that, okay, now it's good that you teach the kid this my kid openings in chess, or can you teach him end games in chess? And they really do not know what is needed for the kid actually at that point, but they do think that this is what is their thought. And I think it's good to have some opinions. It's good to perhaps discuss it with the coach that this is what they are feeling, but it's not a very good idea to have an opinion where you know, the coach also has a contrary opinion, and then you say, okay, now I need to stop this because the coach is not listening to me, because maybe the coach has his own plans with the kid there.
So open conversation and bond is what we need to identify and nurture.
Sagar, you've been a champion yourself. You've seen the journeys of so many of India's grandmasters, Gukesh, I believe, Nihal, so many of them. Can you give us a few stories or examples which led them to be the masters in the game?
Which highlight their approach, especially from the parents' perspective. You know, I'm sure each journey is very unique. So there would be different approaches also to reach that one goal.
Yes, but I think there are a few common things which I've seen in all of them, especially their parents. So the first thing which is very common to all the champions, and maybe we could, you know, cover a few names who are now the best, which is Gukesh, Pragnananda, Arjun, Nihal, Raunak, and maybe a few more who are very good, Pranav, Leon. So the first thing that I see, that these kids all enjoyed chess. Now they've become great champions. So people ask them questions saying that how many hours should one practice to become a champion? And they never really have an answer. There is no fixed timing that they would devote to chess. It was like when they enjoyed it doing it, they would do it. When they felt it became a burden, they would stop doing it. And so chess was really a product of love for them. So that is the first thing. The second one is that the parents were very, very careful in the way they would react to every victory and every loss. I could sense some sort of a detachment to results from the parents. And I don't know if they did it consciously or it happened just on its own. But the parents who were very, very attached to the results of their kids had to at some point take a backseat. It became too much for the kid to handle. An example of this is, let's say when you're playing a game, and chess is a very psychological game. So you are, you know, sitting at the board, the clock is ticking down and thoughts are coming in your head. Suddenly you make a mistake. And when you make a mistake, at that point, your mind needs to figure out what is the best way to come back here. Not to think that how is my parent going to react to my mistake that I made and what are the questions they are going to ask me after the game. What should I answer to my parents after the game? And that is during the game you start thinking about these things. So I feel that being detached from results is very good, and that is even in victories. Like, you don't over celebrate it, you don't really show that you are on top of the world, although you feel maybe sometimes as a parent very happy. But then if you are very happy in victory, the kid often feels like, I should try and make my parents feel this way every time. And that is that could be very difficult to achieve. Yeah. So a healthy detachment is good. That could mean that the kids feel much more safe playing the sport. They feel more on solid ground when they are going into a competitive environment of a sport.
That's a fantastic input. I'm sure it'll resonate with all the parents of sportsmen. Chess is known to be a psychological sport. It takes a lot of thinking, time, everything. To get your brains to work at the maximum, there is a lot of physical activity also, I believe, which is done by the masters. I've seen videos wherein the chess players go and play volleyball. They go for a run a couple of hours a day. So would you like to talk a little bit on that to enhance that output of chess? What is the activity they have to do?
Yeah, I think physical fitness is a key element. I remember that when I was just 21 or 22, I had back pain. And that was because of constantly sitting for long hours on the chessboard. And I was very active in general. I used to play badminton. But I think at some point, I realized that I was not doing enough physical work. And that really impacts your game. Because at some point in the third or fourth hour of play, you start to get tired, your calculations on the board start to become less accurate, you start to rely more on your intuition rather than actually looking at all the possibilities on the board. Right now, the world number one, Magnus Carlsen, is a very good example of how being athletic or being fit is actually a very big advantage for a chess player. So how should a kid develop this? I think it's a very difficult thing to sort of explain to the kid, because just think about it. When you are 8, 9, 10 years old, when you are becoming a good player at chess, you can just play chess and you can become better. A person like me will come and say, hey, but by the age of 20, you will get backache. So you should, start exercising right now and you should build your stamina. And it doesn't really resonate with the kids because, I mean, why should they do it?
They can't make out the connection.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why it's very important to let them experience this part and to bring it in many interesting ways that you can train. For example, a good trainer might give a position to a puzzle to solve in your head and say that go for a run, and by the end you finished running, tell me the answer. That is a very good interesting way of maybe making someone to do the physical workout. Or you could build some kind of, if you have a group, then like I know one of the good trainers in chess, after a full day of training, they all go and play cricket. It's just their way of bonding at the same time being physically fit. So I think a very important aspect is how you introduce this physical fitness aspect for the student or for the player. And then once they see the results, they are like, oh, I felt really sharp on the board. I felt very, very fresh even in the fourth hour. Then you don't no longer need to sell it. Then they start owning that thing.
Sagar, one last thing, which is actually a very big part of making a chess champion, is the investment that parents have to make in the game and in the child. So, because we know other sports which are like tennis, cricket, there's a huge investment that goes. So, can you tell us what is it like for chess?
I think chess begins in a very simple way. You just need a chess board pieces. So, I've often seen parents coming into chess with their kids saying that, oh, this looks like a very nice game. You don't need to have great infrastructure here, or, you know, the rackets, which are generally so expensive here. You can have a chess set which costs 300 rupees and just start playing and so on. But very soon you realize that traveling takes up a major chunk of your investment, because tournaments happen all across India and the world. So that becomes a very heavy point, and you can't leave your kids alone. At some point you have to travel with them, so your costs double because you also have to go there. And the second thing is the training. Chess training is an expensive thing. If when you train with good trainers, it is not it could range anywhere between from a starting point of 5,000 rupees a month to maybe going on to 25 to 50,000 rupees a month when you go and train with very, very accomplished trainers. So, you know, sometimes I see like kids who have started off chess within 2 or 3 or maybe 4 years, the parents are spending close to 5-7 lakh rupees a year for their chess. And often it becomes very, very difficult for them to sustain that financially and economically. But at the same time, I feel that the benefits of pursuing a sport should not be just taken in terms of the improvement in sport. It should be the overall development of the child should be factored in there, that he's getting to travel, meeting new people, making new friends, able to see different places. And I think all of these things is invaluable. You know, a normal education at school often does not provide these things. So maybe a change in perspective there, that maybe you're not investing into his chess career, but the overall growth of the kid could then make the parents spend more easily than just thinking that, oh, it's for the chess growth.
Yeah. And I think it will also somewhere, you know, give them some peace of mind when the child doesn't reach to that level.
100%.
So they don't feel like it is a waste.
100%.
You know, all these years it was a waste, the money went down the drain, doesn't feel like.
No, I agree with you. I think all the players who played chess at a decent level, just like myself, I never became a grandmaster, or I did not become, let's say, a top player. But the learnings from the sport are invaluable in anything that I do today. For example, even when I take a decision, it's very natural for me to think what will happen next after that, how will others react to it, and so on. And I think that happened because every single time on the chessboard when I sat and I thought, okay, if I make a move here, my opponent will react this way. And then I would do this. No, this doesn't look good. Let me look at some other options. And all of this becomes so ingrained in you because you play a sport that it then flows into the other parts of your life.
It just gets you ready for the real life. It's always dynamic, always challenging, always prompting you to accept failures and yet try again.
Yes, exactly. And I think overall, if you are lucky, then chess also becomes your life and your career, which is happening now to more kids, that they are able to sort of take these bold steps of not pursuing a academic life, like going to the school every day and so on, but actually using tournaments and all to grow. And then that becomes your career. Like Gukesh, for example, he hasn't had a formal education. I think he studied until class 5 and then he's been playing. But if you meet him today, the English he speaks, the way in which he interacts, the way in which he talks to the media, you could hardly ever imagine that the kid has not received a formal sort of academic education. So I think there is a huge scope of child growth and development beyond just the sport, the way in which they grow as individuals through sports.
Yes, fantastic. Sagar, do you have any other points which we've missed on in the conversation?
Yeah, I would like to end this by saying that parenting in general is very tough, which is why I have not ventured into doing this. Also, it feels sometimes incorrect for me to give advice as to parents because, you know, you generally should do things which you have experienced in general. But my saving point here is that I've observed many parents. The only thing that I can end this conversation with is that each player or each student has a different path to reaching the top. And that is where it's good to know the stories of everyone, but to actually build your own story there. And not to get too entangled as to how Gukesh and his parents made him into a champion or how Pragnananda and his parents made him into a champion and so on. Because then you are not using the factors or the elements which are available to you in your situation.
It's a unique journey for everyone.
Very much so.
Thank you so much, Sagar, for coming on Partners in Upbringing podcast today and sharing your learnings, your journey, as well as a lot of points for us to ponder upon. So thank you so much. It was a pleasure to have you on our podcast.
Yeah, I also congratulate both of you for doing this podcast, for, you know, bringing this important subject of parenting. I think parents are the key for the nation building, I would say. And so this podcast really is helpful in that sense. And I think your dedication to it is seen from the fact that in order to do this, Himani actually came to the club where we were playing chess and so on and tried to speak before we did this conversation and so on. So I'm very, very grateful that you had me here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Before signing off, we have a small request. If you like what we do, please subscribe to us on the app you're listening to, give us a 5-star rating and drop us a review. Your small actions make a big difference to us. Please do share our podcast with your friends and family to help them raise happy and confident children. If you'd like to know more about Partners in Upbringing, do visit our website partnersinupbringing.com. We also conduct parenting webinars with experts. So if you would like to organize one exclusively for your school or organization, do drop us a message on Facebook or Instagram at Partners in Upbringing, or you can email us on contact@partnersinupbringing.com. We would love to hear from you. If you have a feedback or a comment or a suggestion, or if you would like us to cover a particular topic on the podcast, please do write to us. Meet you again in the next episode of Partners in Upbringing with another topic and a new expert or an inspiring parent. Until then, goodbye, stay safe and happy parenting.
The content of this podcast is the copyright of the makers of this podcast, Partners in Upbringing. The information, opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered as professional advice unless stated. Please refer to https://www.partnersinupbringing.com for further details.